The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome in here to Live Now from Fox. We do have some breaking news for you. We're learning here that President Trump is going to be sending troops to Portland, Oregon. Here's what we're learning. He said today, at the request of Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem, I am directing Secretary of War Pete Hegseth to provide all necessary troops to protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists. I'm also authorizing full force if necessary. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Now to our breaking news in Portland. It's official. President Donald Trump is federalizing 200 Oregon National Guard troops and deploying them into Portland for 60 days to protect federal property, quote, where protests are occurring or likely to occur, he says.
To a deadly mass shooting at a waterfront bar in North Carolina, a suspect allegedly opened fire from a boat into a crowd, killing at least three people and injuring five others. Authorities describe the victims as vacationers visiting the bar 30 miles south of Wilmington. Police say it was highly premeditated attack.
An evening of music and drinks turned into a night of terror.
The subject caught on the boat, shooting into the building from the boat.
Southport officials saying the gunman on a boat began shooting at patrons of the American Fish Company, a popular waterfront pub about 30 miles south of Wilmington.
Evil has come ashore in Southport, North Carolina. This is truly a devastating incident.
A mass shooting at a Mormon church in Michigan has left one person dead and nine others injured, including children. Police say the shooter rammed his truck through the front doors at the same time a large fire started at the church.
He drove his vehicle through the front doors of the church. He then exited his vehicle, firing several rounds at individuals within the church.
Another violent weekend in the United States of America. I mean, you could really give the same program almost every single day. It just gets worse. Even when you have a president come in who's promoting law and order, look at how many incidents there are of violent acts, crime, murder. The spirit, I mean, the spirit is everywhere. That spirit of hatred and, of course, murder carried out in these kinds of atrocities. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. I'm pumped up and ready. Just passed the kindergartners outside on the drive to the studio, and they were giving me the fist pump, the three fist pump, fight, fight, fight. I referenced that over the weekend. So there were our youngest students, the youngest ones receiving God's education out there cheering on the show. And I want to spend more time, by the way, on true education. Because the education that this world has produced, it's certainly not solving the many problems of this world. You go right down, and some of these most gruesome atrocities, you know, the woman who was stabbed in the neck, I think that was in North Carolina as well. Now you've got the shooting over the weekend. Of course, Charlie Kirk, that's just two, 3 weeks ago, captured on video. All of these very high profile acts of crime and violence. And now the troops heading into Portland. President Trump had some comments. We'll get to that a little bit later. He talked about an epidemic of violence. And now you've got these two shootings in Michigan and North Carolina, and evidently these are war veterans. And PTSD is probably going to come into the conversation, I suppose. But that's just a byproduct of war. It's a real thing. And I'm sure coming back when you're struck with that, you're probably getting into medications and drugs. And all of that just leaves the mind more open for demonic influence. We've seen the world of transgenderism, how that opens the mind for demonic influence. Sundance says about the one in Michigan, Grand Blanc law enforcement has identified the suspect in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints church shooting and fire as a 40-year-old man from Burton, Michigan. He rammed his truck into the church, set the church on fire. I think he's murdered four so far. He's now dead or deceased. Injured others. It's just becoming all the more common. The madman who killed at least four people and wounded eight in Michigan is a 40-year-old Iraq war veteran. So he served his country, and then he came back and killed Americans, murdered Americans. I suppose these two instances, too, by the way, will give the radical left another excuse to blame all of the violence, all the crime, all of the murder on some right winger. And the two will go back and forth, as we've seen, arguing over, well, what political movement really motivates more violence? As both sides dig in their heels and prepare for civil war. That's where we're headed. The one in North Carolina. It says here, the madman who targeted a crowded dockside restaurant in a highly premeditated mass shooting in North Carolina is a Purple Heart recipient and a heavily decorated Marine. Wow. They come back and they're sick. They're mentally deranged. And the spirit of murder, as I say, it's in the air. President Trump says, I've been briefed on the horrendous shooting that took place in the church in Grand Blanc, Michigan. The FBI was immediately on the scene and will be leading the investigation. The suspect is dead, but there's still a lot to learn. It says, this appears to be yet another targeted attack on Christians in the United States. The Trump administration will keep the public posted, as we always do. In the meantime, pray for the victims and their families. He says, this epidemic of violence in our country must end immediately. That's the president. It's got to end. We're in the midst of, as I covered last week, a religious revival. I mean, religion is now becoming more popular. And maybe they'll see this, the fact that so many churches are being targeted as the devil's work. And maybe it'll be something they say that, well, this is why it's happening, because there's this spiritual revival in the country. But is there? Is it really true religion? Or as I said to the students this morning, I mean, what they offer in the universities of today, is it true education? Think about what kind of an education would you receive if you were John the Baptist in the first century and you went off into the wilderness. You know, you had the camel's hair coat, you had a leather girdle, you ate a pretty primitive diet. And yet, Jesus Christ said there was no prophet, no greater prophet born of a woman than John the Baptist. Think about the way the world views John the Baptist and his education. And I won't get too far off the track here this morning. But and then how God views it. I mean, this was a servant of God, the prophet of the highest, highly educated. He had the mind of God. That's what true education is all about. And the world just ridicules it. The world ridicules the Bible. Even in the world of religion, they deny the power thereof. They deny the spirit behind the words inspired by God. And the fact that we can be filled with the Spirit, which is the mind of God. I mean, that is true education. That's true scholarship right there. And that's what the world's missing. Herbert Armstrong used to talk about the missing dimension in education. What it's missing is revelation from God. What it's missing is God's mind. And we're seeing what minds are capable of doing. Minds that are cut off from God's mind. That's what happened in Genesis 3. And so here we are, just like they were before the flood. Here we are when the earth is filled with violence. As one of our news gatherers said this morning, it's like we're reliving the book of Judges, where every man's just doing what seems right in his own eyes. Jesse Waters, last week, you've got the sniper who shot at this ICE facility. And then President Trump sending troops up to Portland to protect ICE facilities. You know, those that are just trying to uphold the immigration laws. And they're getting shot at. This is from last week, clip 9.
The sniper, Joshua John, also left notes saying he was the lone gunman. Quote, "Yes, it was just me and my brain," and tried to get investigators to play a game of cat and mouse. One note said, "Good luck with the digital footprint." The FBI didn't have a problem. They cracked right in and discovered multiple Google searches for, quote, "Charlie Kirk shot video." Just a day before the attack, he used the same gun and ammo as Tyler Robinson. This was a Charlie Kirk assassin copycat. Cash says there was a high degree of pre-attack planning. The sniper also had downloaded a list of Homeland Security facilities and was tracking the locations of ICE agents.
"Anyone who creates or distributes these apps that is designed to spot, track, and locate ICE officers are well aware of the dangers that they are exposing to law enforcement. It's no different than giving a hitman the location of their intended target."
Karen Bass this summer was bragging about tracking ICE agents.
"We have a rapid response network where everybody is alerted. If you see masked men getting out of unmarked cars, let everybody in the area know."
How's ICE supposed to do its job if Democrats are blasting out their coordinates to potential hitmen?
That's sickening stuff right there. These are politicians wearing suits, highly educated, and sending out the coordinates of where the ICE officials are, where the facilities are, where law enforcement is. "Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness," the prophet Ezekiel wrote. Chapter 7 of his book, "Make a Chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes." It's full of it. The land is full of blood, crime, violence, murder. We don't know the way to peace, as the prophet Isaiah said. Our feet run to evil. That's in Isaiah 59. We're sprinting to evil. I mean, here's this woman, this politician. I mean, she's talking about the coordinates for ICE officials, and she's smiling. Yeah, this is good news. Jesus came into Galilee preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God, the good news of the kingdom of God. Now, that's good news. In today's world, though, the news that puts a smile on people's faces is when individuals like Charlie Kirk is gunned down. The response, like I said last week, the response to these assassinations, to these targeted killings, it reveals so much about our way of life, our society. It proves this is not God's world. And of course, your Bible says so. The Apostle Paul called this world evil. And that was 2,000 years ago. What is God's assessment of today's world? Well, we're rapidly approaching the end of this age. And that's why Satan and the demons are filled with rage and hatred. And that's why they're carrying out these gross atrocities. Genesis 6 says that the earth was filled with violence. That's God's assessment. We're just opening our minds up to so much hate. It starts as hatred in the heart. And then with some, I mean, they search. I want to see more about the killer, the assassin who took out Charlie Kirk. And then I want to see if I can replicate it. I want to do the same thing. And then you've got the politicians, the radical leftists, saying, yeah, we'll help you figure out where the ICE agents are. There you go. Listen to this also from last week, just to, again, give us a sense of where this is leading. Clip 10.
Well, we're seeing the emergence of a new form of left-wing terror. Back in the last wave of left-wing terror in the 1970s, it was people organized into cells and groups like the Weather Underground, the Black Panther Party. What we're seeing now is a two-part terror system where the left's messaging apparatus, whether it's through the mainstream media or through niche internet forums pushing hard left-wing ideologies, trans ideology, Antifa ideology, the message machine is radicalizing what we could think of as radical normie terrorists, people who are lone wolves in everyday communities that have been radicalized online, and they go out without any institutional support, and they're killing conservatives. And this is a very dangerous precedent, because unlike in the past, where you could infiltrate networks, you could disrupt communications, this is an enormous challenge, and my reporting in the FBI says they're not yet prepared to tackle it.
Isn't it amazing that this is all happening here? Here, God's people are just a week away from celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Ingathering, the feast that really foreshadows what's going to be going on in the wonderful world tomorrow as God gathers in the world and teaches them the way to peace. What a contrast. What a contrast to what we celebrate at the Feast of Tabernacles, the coming utopia where all men will have peace and prosperity and receive true education and be educated in true religion, God's mind. I read this verse this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 2, I think it's verse 35. This is God's prophecy for a righteous priesthood. Eli and his sons were corrupt. Well, certainly the sons were. They were evil. They didn't carry out God's will. And so God prophesied to Eli that he was going to raise up a righteous priesthood, the line of Zadok, the priest, a priest who was loyal, a priest who was obedient to God's commands, a priest who carried out God's will. Notice the prophecy, 1 Samuel 2, verse 35, I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in my heart and in my mind. This is God speaking. I'm going to raise up a priest that has the mind of God, that thinks and lives the way God does. This is pretty deep. What a deep subject. Philippians 2:5 says, let the mind of Christ in. Do you know why God had such a noble assessment of John the Baptist? Because he had the mind of God. He had received true education out in the wilderness. Imagine that. He spent a lot of time alone with God. And what did the world think of John the Baptist? What did Herod and Herodias, his lovely wife, think of John the Baptist? She was a Jezebel of her day. And she deceitfully, in a conniving manner, went after John the Baptist. She wanted him dead. She wanted to murder him. And she did. She got her wish in the end. And then Herod, for his part, just so full of pride. Well, I've got to keep my word to my daughter and go ahead and murder him. That was 2,000 years ago. I mean, the spirit of murder was in the air. And then Jesus Christ comes in the God who lived with God the Father for all eternity. The Word. He came in the flesh. I mean, you can get no greater education than to receive instruction from God in the flesh. And what did the world do with him? How did they treat Jesus Christ? Did they accept him? Did they say, well, he's the greatest educator of ever, really, ever, to ever set foot on this earth? Well, instead they called him a glutton and a drunk, and they said he was breaking the Sabbath. The religious people of his day. They led a campaign to crucify the Son of God. That's what the world thinks of true education. That's the mind of this world. It's not seeking the mind of God. A righteous priest who would live the way God thinks, the way God reasons in his heart. As I said earlier, what a contrast. When you compare this world today with the wonderful world tomorrow, Herbert Armstrong wrote a book by that title and describes it in so much beautiful and vivid detail because there's so many passages in the Bible that describe it. It will be a wonderful world. And we've got to imagine it. We've got to envision it. We've got to see it. And this book will help you do that. But as you watch world events play out today, you see that this is obviously, obviously not God's world. And you know all the scriptures if you're a regular viewer. 2 Corinthians 4:4, Revelation 12:9, Galatians 1:4, Ephesians 2:2. In Judges 19, notice what it says in verse 1. As I said, we're reliving this period of Judges. This book, as you probably know, it ends with a verse saying that every man just did what seemed right in his own eyes. That's where we are. I did it. It was me and my brain. I was trying to copy the killer who took out Charlie Kirk. Judges 19 and verse 1, and it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. So this is the account for Judges 19. It's pretty gruesome. I won't read the entire chapter. But it's similar to Sodom and Gomorrah, what was happening there before Lot and his family had to be dragged out of that community, that sin-drenched city. Verse 22, it says, "And as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door and spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring forth the man that came into your house that we may know him." They wanted to sodomize this visitor. So, again, we're picking it up kind of in the middle of the story. But it's, as I say, it's grotesque. It's violent. It's perverse. 23 says, "And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them, No, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man has come into my house. Do not this folly. Behold, here's my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine, them I will bring out now and humble you them and do with them what seems good to you, but unto this man do not so vile a thing." I mean, we need to get rid of sodomy, he says. And the fact that he's, you know, offering the daughter and this concubine is disgusting in and of itself. But this is the heart of man. What's being exposed here. Verse 25 says, "But the men would not hearken to him, so the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. And then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was until it was light." So they just abused this woman all through the night, left her for dead at the porch of this house. It says in verse 30, well, just to get to the end of it here, I mean, these events basically triggered a civil war in Israel. The man cut up the concubine's body into pieces and sent them out to the tribes of Israel. It was meant to be a warning. It was meant to wake Israel up I mean, just the gruesome act of carving the body into these pieces. This is a bloody nation where there's just violence. Verse 30 says, and it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your minds. It's time to act. It's time to do something. It's time to put an end to this epidemic of violence. It's time to put an end to sexual impurity. It's time to repent of our sins. So that's pretty much the context of what it says there in verse 1. There's no king, there's no righteous leadership, no rule of God. And then you get to verse 25 of the end of the book, Judges 21. It says, and in those days there was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Sin, you see, it's justified if you're doing what seems right in your own eyes. If you're following the course of your mind and not God's mind, look at what it leads to. I mean, it may not be, you know, these kinds of extreme acts of violence for everybody, but the course of this world, I mean, just look at the news and you see what you need to know about this world and what course we're on. I'll just read you that verse in Ephesians since I mention it. Just look at those other verses I mentioned earlier. You know, 2 Corinthians 4:4 and Revelation. Read all of Revelation 12, in fact. But this is the Apostle Paul who says in Ephesians 2 and verse 2, wherein in time past, he's talking to brethren that had come into the church in his day, and he said, in the past, you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. He says further on in verse 3, among whom also we all had our conversation in time or conduct in times past in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature of the children of wrath, even as others. We just followed the course of our own mind. We did what seemed right in our own eyes. And this is where we are today, unless you've come into God's true church. Verse 4 says, but God, who is rich in mercy for his great love, wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, has quickened us or made us alive together with Christ. John the Baptist, he pointed people to Jesus Christ. Now that's true education. That's why he was so brilliant. That's why Jesus said that there's no greater prophet than John the Baptist. He was pointing people to God. And most in the world of his time and since rejected him. Jesus said, I mean, he was here. He came in the spirit and power of Elijah. But they didn't know it. The world didn't know it. The world didn't recognize it. The world rejected him. And you look at Herbert Armstrong, I make this point in Raising the Ruins. Here, there was no one that went right around the world with a religious message. No one went farther than Herbert Armstrong did back in the 1980s. That was the last decade of his life. And yet you listen to people write about religion in the 20th century, and it's like they just erase Herbert Armstrong. Well, yeah, there was Jerry Falwell. He was in the, you know, Jim Baker back in the day. I remember. Oh, yeah. They had these great works that they did. And then they pretend that Mr. Armstrong didn't even exist. And here, this man that you see on the cover of that book right there, the greatest educator of our time, raised up three colleges. They had the missing dimension in education at those colleges, while Mr. Armstrong was in charge anyway. And then as soon as he dies, guess what happened? Worldly scholarship, worldly education enters into the Worldwide Church of God and Ambassador College, and it all gets blotted out. Satan was behind that because he hates true religion. He hates true education. We've got some more news to get to on today's show. When we come back, we'll update you on the Jim Comey indictment and a few other things as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Here on CNN, we can give you a little insight into how James Comey was thinking and feeling about Donald Trump months before this indictment. In an exclusive interview for a forthcoming CNN original series, the interview conducted on May 22nd of 2025, this year, Comey reflected on his firing and his relationship with President Trump. It's pretty remarkable. Let's watch.
Yeah, I'm still considered a villain in MAGA world. I hope I said that correctly, although I've offended enough people in MAGA world, it doesn't matter at this point. I'm not sure exactly why that is. I often joke I'm the relationship that Trump can't get over, wakes up in the middle of the night thinking about me and how I'm living my best life. I think it has some combination of I really have had a happy, productive life since then, and that I spoke out about him, and that despite their absolute best efforts, they were never able to get me.
That, as she said, was recorded a few months ago. Comey there basically he celebrated when they all of the indictments on Donald Trump. How many were there? I mean, how many counts? How many felonies? It was into the 90s, right? They threw everything at Trump. And the fact that this man, he was the dear leader's puppet for sure. But he tried to destroy a sitting president of the United States. I mean, that's an insurrection. And then there's only, what, two counts against him? Victor Davis Hanson has a brilliant piece. Comey faces indictment, but his real crimes remain untouched. I mean, it's nice to see there's something. But what about the real crimes? Or what about the major crimes, the criminal acts? We don't know how this is going to play out, Hansen says, just to paraphrase his opening. But he says here, we know, however, that Comey is not facing a Trumpian $500 million in potential fines. nor 93 indictments, nor the scrutiny of five different local, state, and federal prosecutors, nor, like some of the J6 arrested, will he be sent to solitary confinement to await a trial in a year or two, or to be charged with illegal parading. No, he'll probably, if he does even go to prison, he'll probably be treated pretty good. He is not being charged with pleading amnesia or ignorance in 2018. I didn't know. I couldn't recall. I didn't remember. A reported 245 times while under oath. Yeah, you just go there and say, I don't know. Have no idea. I mean, we just had the story recently about 274 FBI agents embedded into the January 6th protest. And yet how many times when pressed, Christopher Wray, well, now I can't reveal sources and methods. I mean, we can't really reveal that. Well, now it's revealed 274. What were they doing? And if it was so violent, what did they do to stop it? We didn't know for the longest time. Because let's just say it like it is. Those agents were there to incite. Those agents were there to provoke. They have the same spirit you heard right there from Jim Comey. MAGA hates me. Ha ha ha. They've never been able to get me. You add this spirit, this political divide, together with all these violent acts that I covered in the first segment. Where is it leading? He's not been charged for leaking in 2017 a confidential FBI memo of a conversation with then-President Trump. No charges for that. He's not being charged for falsely assuring the President of the United States in 2017 that he was not the object of the current Crossfire Hurricane Russia collusion investigation. He lied to the President, the incoming President. You're not being investigated. Oh, yes, he was. And it would continue. And then along comes the Mueller investigation to try to cover up the truth about the investigation into Trump. The spying, lying to FISA courts? Who's gone down for any of that? He's not being charged for deliberately leaking an FBI memo of a conversation with President Trump for the purpose of injuring him by promoting the appointment of his friend and predecessor, Robert Mueller. He's not being investigated for usurping the role of the DOJ in 2016. When, as an FBI investigator, he served simultaneously as investigator and prosecutor, creating a conflict of interest. No charges for that. He's not being investigated for improperly disclosing his newly reopened investigative case against Hillary Clinton on the eve of the 2016 election. He's not being investigated for tasking Peter Strzok to alter his own original condemnation of Clinton's conduct by replacing the initial and correct term gross negligence, a phrase that denotes a federal crime, with extreme carelessness. Yeah, let's change that to careless, not gross negligence. We don't want her to go to jail. We've got to protect her. He's not being investigated for, nor charged with, birthing the entire governmental role in the Russian collusion hoax. Nothing for that. He's not being investigated for using the fraudulent Steele dossier. He's not being investigated for stumbling upon a rock mosaic on a beach arranged to read 8647. Yeah, murder President Trump. In the spirit of all that we've seen today, actual assassination attempts, yeah, he tweets it out. He sees the shells on the shore. 86, number 47, assassinate Trump. That's what it means. He knew that. Everybody knows it. No charges for that, though. He's not being charged with or investigated for not acting in 2016 on Hillary Clinton's overt use of fabricated material to mask her own criminal exposure and sicking the FBI on her political opponent? He's not, and listen to this, he's not being investigated for attempting in 2017 to entrap or ambush then National Security Advisor designate retired General Michael Flynn by sending two FBI agents, including Peter Strzok, to interview him in expectation after Comey subordinate Andrew McCabe's disingenuous call to mislead Flynn into thinking he need not have a lawyer present. And so they went in there, they entrapped him, and then they unleashed lawfare on Mike Flynn. He got fired. He lost everything in court. They said they were going to go after his son next. It's criminal. And there's a lot more people than Comey involved, as you can see. Instead, he's fortunate that he does not face both more legal jeopardy and social ostracism for all the harm he's done his country, mostly to please the powers that be in the Obama administration, the media, the liberal bipartisan Washington establishment, and his own exaggerated sense of self. I mean, he is in love with Jim Comey. Oh, yes. Who was it? I think we said it last week. The Bill Barr, I believe, talking about his love for himself. It's not just pride and vanity. It's will worship. Will worship. Listen to, I mean, and then you see the talking heads. Their heads are exploding because of just the two counts. In their minds, I mean, he should just skate free. Listen to Scott Jennings from CNN as he talks about Comey's tweet when Trump was indicted. This is clip five.
Well, look, that's the thing. There's a system, and the system includes grand juries and juries of ordinary Americans who get in a room and make decisions. He can't order people to be indicted, and he can't order people to be convicted. He can express his opinion. In the case of Comey, grand jurors in a very liberal jurisdiction got together and decided that the evidence did warrant charges. Comey will go to trial, and then a jury of his peers will decide whether he is guilty or not. The president can't do anything about that. He can make commentary on it. I'm not sure if it's wise or not wise to do that or if it will matter at all. But ultimately, I'll just say what Jim Comey said when Donald Trump was indicted. It's a good day for the rule of law because we have a system, and the system is in place, and the system is working as it was designed.
If you know anything about that show, it's basically him surrounded by all of these lefties that attack him. He's like the lone conservative voice on the panel. So there they are. They line up to defend Comey, all things Comey. And then Jennings drops a truth bomb on them. What about the rule of law? What about if we talk about these two counts? That's it. It's pretty clear cut. Did he or didn't he? And if a grand jury of his peers in a liberal district in Northern Virginia believe that he's committed a crime, aren't we supposed to uphold the law? Haven't we heard over and again, well, nobody's above the law. We heard that through the lawfare at Trump. And Victor Davis Hanson is completely right. Where are the 93 counts? In some cases, they had one charge, and then it was like replicated 30-some times. Well, let's get as many indictments as we can get, as many felonies as we can get. Let's ruin him. Let's charge him $500 million. John Brennan, for his part, well, he rushes to his platforms, the left-wing networks, to defend himself. Here's another one who absolutely loves John Brennan. John Brennan does. Play clip two.
I know you're not going to like this question because you intel people to like talk about yourselves and all of that. But I'm curious how you're doing and how your family's doing.
Well, I'm glad that Jim Comey put out that video statement the other night where he said that they're not going to live on their knees, his family, mm-hmm. and others shouldn't as well. I'm not going to be intimidated by the likes of Donald Trump. I have always tried to speak my mind and do what I thought was right. And clearly there is a corruption and a perversion of the justice system right now within the executive branch. And so, yeah, I don't know what may be coming my way, but I'm not going to do things that are inconsistent with my ethics and my values and what it is that I believe is important. I think more people have to speak out when they see injustice. When they see a government that is abusing its authority and its power, I think more and more people have to speak out. And I'm waiting for those Republicans mm-hmm. in Congress to come to their senses, because the damage that's being done to this country and the dangerous times that we're in, I think too many Americans do not appreciate the extent of that.
Don't worry. There's plenty of Republicans that agree with these people. They're all over the place, particularly in Washington, in the swamp. Yep, the Rhino Republicans. They have a good soundbite every once in a while. But even they are intimidated by these types. Or they worship them. Some have awakened and then joined MAGA, I guess. But here they are now. They're very offended by politically motivated investigations. They're very offended by any indictments aimed at any politician. The lack of self-awareness, I mean, stunning. They, as VDH brings out, $500 billion, all of these, I mean, these prosecutors from all over the country going after Trump, making stuff up, and then two assassins trying to kill him? John Brent, skip to clip four.
You know, I don't see any case against me. I have looked back on all of my actions and decisions, and with John Durham, the special counsel, and others that have looked at what we did, it was certainly consistent with our legal authorities and with the law. So I don't know what, you know, they're referring to there. Individuals who used to work in the government, even if their security clearances were revoked, they could be subpoenaed. They could be, you know, called to provide testimony in support of whatever allegations they have. I don't see a case there.
We've got to save that one for the archives. I don't see any case against me. I have looked back on all of my actions and decisions. I'm perfect. I'm righteous. I am holy. I have the purest of hearts. If they start saying that, you know there's some corruption deep, deep inside. And it goes deep. He voted communist in 1976. How he got to where he got to, well, we'll never know. It just shows that everything Donald Trump discerned coming on, even the first time around, 2015 and 16. The deep state, the swamp, lots and lots of corruption. And again, with both sides just digging in their heels. And then looking at our violent culture. I mean, the earth is filled with violence. You don't even really need all the prophecies of God. Ezekiel 5 and other passages, Matthew 24, Revelation 6. You don't even need it to see where this is headed. You just need some common sense, and you need to open your eyes and watch. Not 1 ounce of contrition, remorse, repentance, nothing. Nothing. Here's Eric Swalwell talking about what's going to happen when the Democrats regain a majority, if they do. In Congress, clip six.
Well, first, we are making it clear that we're going into the majority a year from now. We have every intention to do that. And so we will bring oversight, accountability. We will subpoena the Department of Justice, but also private actors who have done these drug deals with the administration, college campuses, entertainment companies, law firms. And so accountability is coming.
So they're going to go after Trump and his people. As soon as they get back in power, that's the way that it goes in the swamp. Chuck Schumer, I won't play the clip, but he says no president has weaponized the DOJ like Donald Trump. There you go. It's everything's politicized now. Everything's politically motivated now. This bit about the 274 FBI agents I don't have time to get to. Maybe we could skip that. Go ahead and play. I won't have time to comment on it much, but play the montage on Benjamin Netanyahu and just the relationship with President Trump and America. This goes on for a few minutes, but clip 8.
Details are emerging this weekend of a U.S. proposed 21-point peace plan for ending the war in Gaza. If Israel and Hamas agree to this plan, the war would immediately end. The IDF will gradually withdraw from the Gaza Strip. All hostages will be returned within 48 hours. And then after that, Israel would free 1,000 Palestinian prisoners and aid will surge immediately. But Hamas members who choose to stay would get amnesty. How is your relationship with President Trump now?
It's actually unparalleled in the history of our two nations. It doesn't mean we agree on everything, but we agree on the substantive things.
President Trump called on Israel to not strike Qatar again. This 18 or point 18 of the plan calls for Israel to pledge not to strike Qatar again. Is that something that you will pledge today not to do? Because your ambassador to the U.S. said after the strikes, if we didn't get the Hamas leaders this time, we'll get them next time. That indicated you might want to do it again.
Jackie, I'm going to talk about that with President Trump. I'd rather have that done there rather than done here. And, you know, Fox News is very important, but leave that. Sometimes diplomacy should precede public expressions.
Okay. So are you saying, sir, that not all of the enriched uranium was destroyed during the 12-day war or by those strikes from B-2 bombers?
Sure. No, we knew that in advance. In fact, our whole plan before and after the United States decided to join us, took into account that we wouldn't get these 450 kilograms of enriched uranium. We knew that.
You did push back on claims that Israel has had a starvation policy in Gaza. But for 2 months this year, all aid into Gaza was blocked. You control the borders. You've seen the images. Do you take any responsibility for the humanitarian situation there?
It's not starvation. It's the opposite of starvation. So the answer, the simple answer is there was never a starvation policy, and there never will be a starvation policy.
No starvation policy, but you're not denying that there is starvation in Gaza, correct?
No, I am saying actually there was no starvation. There was deprivation.
Do you still believe that 20 hostages are still alive?
Yes, I do. I do. And we're committed to get them out, every last one of them, including the deceased hostages. These are monsters, and they have to, every nation now in the world has to say one thing to the to Hamas, you know, release the hostages, all of them, and lay down your arms. And if you do that, the war can come to an end immediately, right now.
You know, the Prime Minister of Israel is one of the world's most consequential leaders right now. Everybody cares what Israel does. And you know, everybody has their interest in saying what Israel should be doing. And you might have thought, for example, that the Prime Minister would speak early in the week when all the other major leaders of the world are speaking. But no, the United Nations always schedules the Prime Minister of the State of Israel to speak on the final day of the General Assembly after most of the major world leaders have already left. And when he did speak, I would say that about 75% of the people that were in the room that had gone through the security screening to get into the room, you stood up and left. Despite the intentionally difficult conditions, that the Prime Minister is very, very familiar and comfortable with these difficult settings and gave an important speech. So I just saw this. I need to take another closer look, is that he said that ultimately that Gaza would be handed over to the Palestinian Authority. And this is something that that Israel really didn't want to happen. The Prime Minister in his speech talked over and over again about how the Palestinian Authority is really not better than Hamas, how the Palestinian Authority literally pays terrorists to kill not only Jews and Israelis, but also Americans. You know, the situation that where Israel enjoys the support of the United States, this could very well be temporary. We see what's going on in the United States. We see what progressive Democrats think about Israel and the Prime Minister. Quite frankly, we see what folks on the right are like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens. No guarantees that the pro-Israel policies, which I think are more important, like the president opting to strike against the Fordo reactor in Iran and providing 100% backing, as President Trump said in his speech to the United Nations, for Israel, if that will continue into the future.
And you know about the wedge that the devil's driving between Bibi Netanyahu and Israel and the United States. And so he gives this blistering speech. That was Friday. You heard there the commentary. The UN hates him so much that they schedule him right at the very end. Most people there leave. He's like speaking to, I mean, thankfully it's on TV, but the disrespect, I mean, for one of the most consequential leaders in the world, and you look at the resistance that he gets from both sides here in the United States, from the radical left, but also many on the conservative right as well. He does certainly show some courage, Bibi Netanyahu, to get up and to defend his nation, to go on the offensive, in fact, and then to speak, as he did Friday, with such boldness, with such clarity, with such vision. It's refreshing. Go back and view Friday's episode if you want some excerpts from that wonderful speech. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. I took you a minute or two over, but I won't charge you any extra for the extra material, the extra content. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.